Okay, we're good. Okay, good morning, everyone. In case you're new or you don't know who I am no longer an intern here. I haven't been an intern here for a while, but I think my name was still in the bulletin up to a couple weeks ago. But I don't work here anymore. That's okay. I like it here. we're good. We're happy. So I've been doing some thinking over the past couple of weeks, and this time, it's like July 22nd, and I haven't actually been at this church during this time in like years. So it's kind of weird to be here during the summertime, because I spend a lot of time at Camp Squia, and it's been great, but this year has been a little change because I'm not there. And that kind of, I'm going to use a little bit of that to kind of illustrate where I'm going here. But today we're going to be looking at Elijah and the sound of a gentle whisper, found in 1 Kings 19, 9-18. So we're throwing on a little bit of a progressive service here. So I don't actually have the words for the scripture on the PowerPoint. So I encourage you to open up the Bibles in the pews in front of you or your Bible app, and we're going a little Bible school here, so if you want to do well, you should pay attention, because there will be a quiz afterwards. So it'll be good. So, 1 Kings 19, 9-18 is going to be our scripture reference for today. So over the past couple of weeks, Bob and Bless have been looking at the character of Elijah, and what it means to follow God through the person of Elijah in the Old Testament. So last week, Bless talked about the challenge on Mount Carmel in 1 Kings 18, and he talked about the importance and the gravity of choice, and how Elijah challenged people to make a choice and stand up for God. Their inability to choose created a special opportunity for God to showcase his power and prove his sovereignty. But at the end of the message, we find out that not everyone is able to understand, and that is not enough for them to know that God is God. And we're going to get into a little bit of that this morning in my introduction. So today we're going to continue on with the character of Elijah. This story in particular, this part of Elijah's story, is one of my favorite Old Testament stories. It's also one that I've had a little bit of a hard time applying in my own life. It's short, it's only a few verses, but I think it has a lot to speak to us today, especially in this age, in this day and age. So if you take a look on your screen or in the bulletins, the title I have chosen today for the message is The Sound of a Gentle Whisper. How many of you can say that you regularly converse with someone who speaks in the sound of a gentle whisper? Is it easy to listen to a whisper, or is it hard? I'm going to say, for most of us, it's probably pretty hard. Living in today's world has made it increasingly hard to be still and find a place of quiet. So last weekend, when Lyric and I got engaged, we were visiting Camp Squia, and to this day, Squia is still one of the only places I find that I can sit down and bask in the quiet away from the noise. With the exception of birds or the occasional train or the noise from the highway, it is one of the places that I find I'm most able to be in tune with God's voice. If you've never experienced that kind of quiet, for most people, it is a beautiful thing. I think as time moves on, our world is only going to become more noisy and more cluttered, and those times when we are able to sit in the quiet and the silence and hear God's quiet voice is going to be harder and harder to find. I think we take times like this for granted when we're able just to sit in the quiet. And I think that too often we get awkward or we're uncomfortable with silence, but I think that is one of the ways that God can speak to us the most. So how many of you can say that you've spent a decent amount of time sitting in the quiet and listening for God's voice? Like I just mentioned, it's hard, and there isn't a lot of opportunity to do so. I can honestly say that I have yet to hear an audible voice from God and I've spent a fair amount of time over the last 21 years of my life trying to do so, and it hasn't happened. I've become okay with that, and I'm learning to come to terms with that's not how God speaks to everyone. I do get a little bit envious, though, when I hear of my friends or family, or I hear someone hearing this voice from God or seeing this loud, big, massive display. But I'm still working on intentionally finding places to be quiet, and I find that even if I'm not able to hear God's voice, I know that He's there. So I challenge you as we go through the story today to think of these questions as I talk and explain and as we read the story together. We're going to be looking at four questions, and I want you to try and pick out things that are interesting to you and things that you can apply in your own life. So the first one we're going to think about is, what is the story itself? The second one is, who is God in the story and what role does He play? The third one is, what is Elijah's response to the story and to God? And the fourth is, what can we do? What is our response and how can we apply what Elijah is learning in today's world? Okay, so we're going to be going, I've framed it, so we're going to take a few verses and then I'm going to do a little bit of explaining and then we're going to take another couple verses and we're just going to go like that. So if you open up your phones or your Bibles to 1 Kings 19, 1-18, we'll do some reading together. I also did something a little different where I put main points in here in case you don't want to read. So I'm just going to read this and then we'll go through it together. So 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 1-18 says this. When Ahab got home, he told Jezebel everything Elijah had done, including the way he had killed the prophets of Baal. So Jezebel sent this message to Elijah. May the gods strike me and even kill me if by this time tomorrow I have not killed you just as you killed them. Elijah was afraid and fled for his life. He went to Beersheba, a town in Judah, and left his servant there. Then he went on alone into the wilderness, traveling all day. He sat down under a solitary broom tree and prayed that he might die. I've had enough, Lord, he said. Take my life, for I am no better than my ancestors who have already died. Then he lay down and slept under the broom tree. But as he was sleeping, an angel touched him and told him, get up and eat. He looked around, and there beside his bed was some bread baked on hot stones and a jar of water. So he ate and drank and lay down again. Then the angel of the Lord came again and touched him and said, get up and eat some more, or the journey ahead will be too much for you. So he got up, ate and drank, and the food gave him enough strength to travel 40 days and 40 nights to Mount Sinai, the mountain of God. So we see in verse 2, that Jezebel, the queen, sent this messenger to Elijah with a threat. And after the events of Mount Carmel with the challenge and all of the prophets of Baal dying, Elijah becomes terrified and fled for his life from Jezebel. And after some reading on the character of Jezebel, I discovered that she was not a force to be reckoned with. And if you were here 2 weeks ago, every time Bob said the word Jezebel, you guys had to make like a weird sound. Yeah, there you go. That probably describes her pretty well. So whenever Jezebel uttered a threat or made a promise to kill someone or harm someone, that was not something to be taken lightly, and 9 times out of 10, it would happen right away. So if you can think of yourself in Elijah's perspective, when you know that Jezebel is serious about what she says and is able to get things done, I believe I'd be scared too. So this is why he fled. So Elijah specifically chose, let's see if this works. Okay, so if you can see the big red balloon there, that is Beersheba. So that's where Elijah fled to. And kind of in the middle, you can't really see it, it's up on the top right, is Mount Carmel, to where the big display and the challenge of the prophets was. And the distance from there to Beersheba is about 193 kilometers. So it would have taken an average traveler around 6 days to complete. But the thought is that Elijah spent less time because he was running a lot of his journey. So that's a big, long journey, and if you're running, that's tiring. Okay. So it seems in his journey here that Elijah is completely neglecting to listen to God. I discovered a few times in his story, in almost every chapter, every interaction that Elijah has, he's in tune with God, and there's always the statement that the Lord said to God, or the word of the Lord came Elijah, and the word of the Lord came to Elijah. And this is one of the very few times in the story that that doesn't happen. So this threat of Jezebel, may the gods strike me and even kill me if by this time tomorrow I have not killed you as you killed them, in verse 2, has completely consumed his mind. That is his entire focus. He is no longer listening to what God is saying or where he is leading him. He is only focusing on his fear and fending for his own life. In a sense, Elijah had given up hope. He was discouraged, and in verse 4, he prays to God and, in a sense, gives up. He says, I've had enough, Lord. Take my life, for I am no better than my ancestors who have already died. Elijah feels useless, and his fear has completely consumed his mind. He's neglecting to remember the past miracles that God had performed through him in earlier chapters, such as the raising of a dead child or the mighty acts of the challenge on Mount Carmel. His focus is completely now on his fear and his loss of the Israelites as they have become more inclined to worship Baal as opposed to God. He laments the death count of his fellow prophets too, and he feels like he's the only one who's remaining. His mind is defeated, and in a sense to Elijah, Jezebel is won. Now all he can do is just try and survive. That's how bad he feels at this moment in his journey. In reality, he isn't alone, but he feels it for sure. And I want to stop and think for a second how often we feel like Elijah in this moment. How often are we at times of loss and our minds are consumed with overwhelming defeat? We neglect to remember what God has done in the past and how good he is, he will be in the future. Surely if he has been good to us in the past, he will continue to be good in the future, even if we cannot understand it. Again, it's easy to say that. Easy to say, but I think a lot of us get like this. I know that I have for sure. I haven't performed any miracles, and you may not have either. But I think all of us, if not most of us, can recall a time when God was good. My friends, it takes a lot to come out of a dark place like that. If any of you have felt this, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. But we can see, we're going to discover, as we go into the story a little bit more, that God is still good, even when we feel like we have lost. Okay, so as we continue on, we see that God has shows his faithfulness to Elijah and makes the first move by sending the angel twice to provide for him in his journey. God did not tell Elijah to go on this journey. I think it's important to remember that this is not a journey that God instructed Elijah to take part on. But even though Elijah was afraid and set out on his own plan, God still made the first move and provided for him. Even though Elijah's mind has accepted defeat and his focus is not on God, not once does God neglect his chosen Elijah. And I think for us too, sometimes God does make the first move, even if we have forgotten him. Not sometimes. I think he always can make the first move, even if it's not in ways that we understand. One of the commentaries I was reading as I was studying describes the moment when God provides the angel for Elijah to sustain him, says this, and I think it's great. It says, now it's God's turn to take the initiative with an angel or messenger of his own, and he's referring to Elijah's interaction with Jezebel's messenger. Now it's God's time to take the initiative with an angel or messenger of his own. It's God's first move in leading Elijah back onto the path of faith from which he has strayed. Now, there's also some interesting interesting thoughts about Elijah spending 40 days and 40 nights on his journey to Mount Sinai. So if any of you have spent any time at CBC, in Ken Esau's Old Testament survey class, I think there used to be 12, but now I think there's 13 stages of the Old Testament. It's crazy, but it's good. One of the most infamous stages that Ken teaches us is the wilderness wandering stage that Israel went through while being led to the Promised Land. And I'm not going to put it up there, but if you're interested in learning more about that, you can find it in Numbers chapter 14. I won't go into too much detail, but the Israelites spent 40 days and 40 nights wandering aimlessly in the wilderness at this stage in their journey as God was leading them to the Promised Land. Now, if we fast forward to Luke's gospel in the New Testament, Luke 4:2 explains that when Jesus was being tempted by the devil, he was tempted for 40 days and 40 nights. And like Elijah, he didn't eat anything. So just a couple of interesting facts there. So we'll carry on. I'd love to talk about this forever, but it's hot in here, so I won't. So now we're going to move on to verses 9 to 13. So this is when Elijah arrives at Mount Sinai, or Mount Horeb, as different translations say. They both mean the same thing. So verse 9 says this: "There he came to a cave where he spent the night. The Lord speaks to Elijah, but the Lord said to him, 'What are you doing here, Elijah?' Elijah replied, 'I have zealously served the Lord Almighty, but the people of Israel have broken their covenant with you. They've torn down your altars and killed every one of your prophets. I am the only one left, and now they are trying to kill me too.' 'Go out and stand before me on the mountain,' the Lord told him. And as Elijah stood there, the Lord passed, and a mighty windstorm hit the mountain. It was such a terrible blast that the rocks were torn loose, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, there was a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, there was the sound of a gentle whisper." See what I did there? "When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave." So Elijah arrives at Horeb, or Mount Sinai, which means the mountain of God. God asks Elijah what he's doing there. And I think it's interesting because God already knows what Elijah is doing there, but is looking for Elijah to answer himself, to know his heart. Elijah responds by defending himself and explaining about how he has done so much, and he's the only one left who faithfully serves God and has, in a sense, failed his people. So as the story says, God tells Elijah to go out and stand on the mountain. Elijah seeks for God in the rushing wind, and he's not there. Elijah seeks for God in the mighty earthquake, and he's not there either. And then finally, Elijah seeks for God in the fire, and he's not there. So just to be clear, these acts were of God. God did perform these acts for Elijah, but Elijah is seeking to hear his voice, and his voice is not in any of these actions here. I think that Elijah came into that experience on Sinai living in expectancy. He was anticipating that God would speak to him in a certain way. Elijah sought God in these massive, destructive actions, what we'd call in classic insurance claims, acts of God. Elijah had expectancy. And I think what's interesting here, and Bob and I talked about this before, and I did a lot more reading on it, was that maybe Elijah wanted to have the same interaction with God that Moses had when he was revealed the Ten Commandments. So, a little bit of backtrack here. In the book of Exodus, if you don't already know, Moses is leading the Israelite people. So this is way earlier than Elijah's time. And so I'll read it a little bit, and then I'll kind of explain what's going on. So Exodus 19, 16 to 20. "On the morning of the third day, the thunder roared and lightning flashed, and a dense cloud came on the mountain. There was a long, loud blast from a ram's horn, and all the people trembled. Moses led them out of the camp to meet with God, And they stood at the foot of the mountain. All of Sinai was covered with smoke because the Lord had descended on it in the form of fire. The smoke billowed into the sky like smoke from a black kiln, and the whole mountain shook violently. As the blast of the ram's horn grew louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God thundered his reply. The Lord came down on the top of Mount Sinai and called Moses to the top of the mountain. So Moses climbed the mountain. So Moses had this wild experience with God on Mount Sinai. And if you can picture what's going on in here, I don't know how I would react to that other than being in utter fear. So God descends on this mountain, okay, and there's a loud horn going on, and it's making everyone go insane, and everything is shaking, and there's chaos, and like it's evident that God is there, and I think people are a little bit afraid at this time. And you hear God speaking to Moses and in this loud, booming, thunderous voice. And I think that maybe because it was on the same mountain, that maybe Elijah went in with those expectant thoughts as well. He had just had this big experience with God on Mount Carmel in the challenge with the prophets of Baal. And he knows this, and he knows about Moses' experience with God on Mount Sinai. So perhaps Elijah went in with expectancy that he was going to see God and interact with God in this way, and he didn't. So although we're not 100% sure that Elijah was seeking a textbook experience that Moses had, the resemblance in both stories is uncanny. Elijah was living in expectancy that God was going to reveal himself to him in this big and noticeable way, and he did not. So in comparison, Moses met God on the holy mountain, and Elijah was to meet God on the holy mountain. God met Moses with a storm, and Elijah couldn't find God in the storm. God met Moses in the fire, and Elijah couldn't find God in the fire. So I try to picture myself in Elijah's shoes, and I feel like I'd be a little bit rattled and maybe a little disappointed that I've only heard God through a little whisper. I think it's interesting, too, because the previous experience on Mount Carmel and the experience in Exodus create this sense of fear among the people, and that there needs to, like, God needs to be feared. But I think the whisper here shows that God is personable and he wants to speak to you even in the quiet. So it wasn't even until Elijah humbled and quieted himself that he was able to, that God revealed himself to him. So I think that Elijah had known God for a long time. And I think that there are aspects of God's character that Elijah was familiar with and that Elijah had known. And maybe Elijah had gotten a little arrogant in thinking that he knew God in this way, therefore he knew the fullness of God. But what Elijah didn't expect was that God would speak to him in this little whisper, showing another aspect of God's character. And I think Elijah was rattled a little bit. There are even thoughts that speculate that Elijah did not want to hear what God had to say to him, that Elijah was still so focused and consumed on fleeing and his disappointment with his people that he did not want to hear what God was saying and was ready to give up. Okay, so now we're going to carry on. Whoops. Okay, so now we're doing the last four verses here, 14 to 18. And a voice said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He replied again, "I have zealously served the Lord God Almighty, but the people of Israel have broken their covenant with you. They've torn down your altars and killed every one of your prophets. I'm the only one left, and now they're trying to kill me too." Then the Lord told him, "Go back the same way you came and travel to the wilderness of Damascus. When you arrive there, anoint Hazael to be king of Aram, and anoint Jehu, grandson of Nimshi, to be king of Israel. And then anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat, in the town of Abel-Meholah, to replace you as my prophet. Anyone who escapes from Hazael will be killed by Jehu, and anyone who escapes Jehu will be killed by Elisha. Yet I will preserve 7,000 others in Israel who have never bowed down to Baal or kissed him." So when God when Elijah interacts with God, it's interesting here Elijah's response both in word and action. So again, God questions Elijah on his whereabouts and why he's here. And interestingly, Elijah responds with the exact same answer as he did the first time God asked him the question. God's intention here, we think, is that he was expecting a different answer from Elijah. But the reality is that's not what happened. Elijah responded by repeating the exact same answer that he did the first time. Even after hearing God in this new, unreal way, Elijah has continued his state of stagnancy. He is still focusing heavily on his defeats, and he has appeared to have gone nowhere in terms of his growth. And it's interesting because the Lord just responds to him by telling him to go do something else. So God doesn't question Elijah's answer. God doesn't tell him, "Oh, it's going to be okay, I'm here." God responds by telling him to go back into the place he was running from to carry on the mission. So I feel like if I was Elijah, hearing all of these things that are about to happen, would know that my mission is not finished. So God is sending Elijah to go and make all these changes, and these changes are not happening on Elijah's accord, even though he might have wanted them to be that way. But his mission is going to be carried on by those who are following in his steps. I think at this time, Elijah's understanding that he's nearing his end of his mission here on earth, and that God is still going to carry out his good plan to the nation of Israel. By explaining that God will preserve 7,000 others in Israel that have not bowed down to Baal, Elijah, I think, is recognizing that Israel's not lost and that there are still those who are faithful, even if Elijah has not seen it. Okay, so now we will enter the fourth question, if you've gotten the answers from the three questions. It's good. How can we respond and apply to this in our own life? So I've got three kind of takeaway points here that I think we can learn from this story and apply to ourselves. The first one is this, that God shows up in ways we least expect. So as we discovered, when Elijah arrived at Sinai, he expected God to give this huge showcase of might and power in revealing himself. That was the God that Elijah had known and had experience with. Even when his focus was entirely on his fear, he neglected writing his mind with God, and he still expected to see God in this way that he had known before. What I think Elijah learned, and what we can learn ourselves, is that God's character is so vast, and the spectrum of which he is able to reveal himself is so wide, that we would be foolish to think for 1 minute that we have an expert knowledge of God. I feel like if I was Elijah in this experience, I would have experienced a great deal of humility. And I would have a newfound appreciation for God's character. And I think that's a reality for all of us too. Some of us have had these big, wild experiences with God, and some of us haven't. But I don't think that means that God doesn't speak to us and hasn't before and will not in the future. God speaks to us in ways we understand, and he also speaks to us in ways that that will challenge us, and that maybe we have to make a little more effort in putting time to listen to what he has to say. So that's the first one. The second one is this. God is faithful even if we aren't. So what's interesting is even though Elijah set out on his own journey and that wasn't planned by God or instructed by God, not once did God abandon Elijah. So even though Elijah's focus was completely not on God and completely on himself and his life, he sent the angel multiple times to provide food and water for this journey. He allowed his life to be spared from Jezebel, as we'll look at in the future. There is no more mention of Jezebel in this story. So God allows his life to be spared, and he even revealed himself personally to Elijah in a new way. And God concluded his message to Elijah with a new mission. Even when Elijah feels alone and defeated, he's given a new purpose and a new mission to carry out God's plan for humanity. Elijah is being forced to give up control of changing Israel and giving that power up to those God had commanded him to anoint to follow him behind. Elijah is, in a sense, passing on the torch, even though he feels like there is no torch to be passed. So that's the second one. And here's the third one. God calls us to obedience, even if it takes us to places we're afraid of. Despite Elijah's dire situation and overwhelming fear, God still challenges Elijah and calls him to obey. We see that God stretched Elijah's knowledge of himself by revealing him in a new way. We saw that at the end of Elijah's interaction with God, God calls Elijah to return to the very place he was running from to carry out his good mission. So the very place that Elijah was running from and knew that if he would return, he would die, God was calling him back into those waters to carry on his mission. And I think Elijah doing that would have to take a certain level of faith. And I think Elijah had that. So those are the three concluding parts. Whoops. Okay. So now, Derek, where are you? Derek is here. Okay, so now we're going to do our little quiz here. So, everyone feeling good? It's good? Okay.